Testing, 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 testing. Testing, 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 testing. This is the Housing Finance Task Force meeting, November 1st, 1989, in Anchorage.
See, Board of Directors, and then Representative Ulmer will be coming online at 4:30. With a proposal for HFC financing for senior citizens. I'd also like to add that we're on teleconference, and Mary Heller is with us alive and well. You there, Mary?
Yes, I am.
Okay. So, without anything else, Representative Phillips, could you give the task force an update on the consultant selection?
Thanks, Jared. Last Friday, the five of us met here in this office and selected a consultant, and that consultant was Ernest and Young. We had four bids on the project or on the contract itself, and as I said, we selected Ernest and Young. Ernest and Young and Price Waterhouse were extremely close in the totaling of votes and stuff like that, but that was the final outcome and the consensus of the five of us. Another thing that was pointed out, which we did not know, is that we have to wait 10 days once the contract's been awarded as of last Friday, because then you'll have to wait and see if there's any other appeals from the other three bidders on the contract. And if, I don't know whether it's to this date, whether it has or has not been appealed or not, but 10 days should end next Monday.
Okay.
Other than that, everything went smoothly, and they're supposed to be working on it.
Well, I appreciate you and Senator DeHall for participating in that. Can you tell us, are we within the $300,000?
$294,000, I believe. It was under $300,000.
Okay.
Also, I think they had, let's see, Ernst & Whitney had a, well, they would have the work done for sure by January 1, 1990.
Do we have a copy of their proposal?
I don't have it. Alaska Housing people do. I think maybe Rick has the proposals in his office, but I know Alaska Housing has it.
Do we have anybody from Alaska Housing here? Not that special.
What was the essence of what they proposed?
What was the essence? I wish I had it in front of me.
They basically complied with the prospectus that we approved during the last committee meeting.
Right. And what did that prospectus say?
Carl's getting it out for you, but we asked very specific questions, and I believe you were here at the time that we approved those questions. Carl's handed those to Senator Sinansky. Go ahead, Randy.
I might want to add a couple more things. The Ernest and Young proposal, the reason it was so close, the Ernest and Young proposals, they seem to have the experience and the personnel. However, Price Waterhouse and the collective wisdom of the five of us had a better work plan for this contract, and so we suggested that maybe once this has been awarded, that maybe they ought to take a look at that work plan for Price Waterhouse, because their work plan, in our opinion, was superior to Ernest and Young. But the overall point as far as experience, work plan, the price of their proposal, the time frame which they were going to do it, they came on top on overall cumulative point totals for the five of us. So I just want to let you know the differences between the two.
Are there any other questions concerning the consultant and the bid award? With the permission of the other members of the task force, I'd like to move the proposed legislation to the bottom for the convenience of Representative Brown and for Representative Ulmer. Are there any objections to moving that agenda? Representative Brown, you and I had a brief conversation concerning the feasibility of combining ASHA and HFC boards, and wonder if you would explain to the committee what your idea is. And
sure, I'd be happy to. And I noticed that since Cynthia Parker, who chairs this group that's been working on this, is here, and she may have some comments she'd like to add. But are we on teleconference now?
Yes.
Just briefly, the Housing Policy Development Committee has been working for more than a year, and it's got several legislators on it. It's mostly comprised of housing professionals. And as that group has proceeded, a number of things have become apparent, and one of them is that the state doesn't have a coordinated housing policy. We have some programs that were put in place at various points in time in separate agencies, and those agencies operate and do their best to carry out their respective missions, but there's no system or structure in place really to coordinate their activities, to set priorities, or to do anything other than what's happening now, which one of the things this group has identified is that there are some gaps in needs out there that people have for housing. Particularly in the areas of so-called transitional housing, the mentally ill, and other areas in the social service arena. So the Housing Policy Development Committee had came up with this proposal to have an advisory housing commission that would do a lot of this policy planning and development. And it would be kind of off to the side. It would be a new entity and would presumably cost additional state dollars to set that up. I have been in and out of this group, and when I arrived at the meeting at which this was being discussed, I told them I felt it wasn't necessarily feasible the way that it was proposed, because you can't really give it any authority unless you go into the statutes and make sense of the interrelationships of these agencies. And there's really three primary ones: ASHA, AHFC, and then the Housing Programs and Community and Regional Affairs. Some of us began brainstorming and came up with the idea of combining, rather than having an advisory commission, to have a policy-making commission and to put it in charge of ASHA, AHFC, and have the Commissioner of Community and Regional Affairs sit on the board. I think this would be a preferable approach to the status quo. I think it could be done for less money than we're spending today, although if we even begin to address the needs that have been identified, we're talking about spending more money, obviously, because there are a number of needs. But right now, this week, the committee is going to meet on Friday and presumably take what will be their final action on recommendations to the legislature, or is it to the Market Council? To the Market Council. So then the Market Council is a group that consists of the heads of those agencies, as well as Glenda Strawby, and is that it?
Others? Four public members.
And four public members.
Would it be helpful to ask something to come up?
Yes, it would. She's much more familiar with this than I.
Maybe if you could just share the mic with her.
So I've chatted in the last couple of days with both Ray Price and Tom Bean about it, and I guess it would be accurate to say they both have some reservations about it, and I'd attribute some of that to just natural resistance to change, that when people don't really understand what's going to happen to them or to their agency, there's a natural reluctance not to want to do things differently. The objections that I've heard from people are such things as functions are very involved presently, and they're concerned about getting too much responsibility in a single board, and would there be enough time to get everything done? And I'm trying to think, what are their other objections? I guess I think after looking at the alternatives that this still does make sense. I think from the work that your group is doing, it seems that we're headed toward making some change in the long-term direction of AHFC. And as you consider that, I'd hope that we'd also look at the other elements of the housing policy and take seriously this work that's been done by this committee. I think it's really some good work that has been done in identifying these needs. I guess there are some policy tensions that come down, which is, where do your resources go, and how, and what are your priorities, and how do the urban and the rural priorities interact with each other? The needs to serve the middle and upper class versus people in need and the lower income people. Those kinds of tensions are there now, but they're not getting explicitly addressed. We just have these programs in place that are turning on. And I think, for example, a housing commission with policy authority over those agencies could do something about our foreclosed inventory and converting that to productive use. We've talked a lot about, here we have all these empty houses and mobile homes sitting around, and we have people that do not have a place to live, and why can't we somehow figure out how to change those units into productive use? It's a lot more likely to happen if those things are consolidated in a single agency. I'd see if Cynthia would like to add anything generally.
Are we on teleconference?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, maybe I'm on lock forward. I really don't have a lot to add to what Representative Brown has in terms of her proposal. I can just tell you a little bit about where we are in our overall process as far as the Market Council is concerned and as far as the Housing Policy Development Committee, and why I came here today, because I was hoping that we could dovetail with some of your process that you're starting itself. The Market Council, as you probably are aware, and Representative Brown did articulate it, is comprised of the heads of all the housing agencies, and also Dave Rose from the Permanent Fund is on the board, and Commissioner McCurlyoff as well, and then there are four public members. I'm one of the public members. I'm the chair of the Market Council, and I'm also chairing this committee of the council, which is the Housing Policy Committee. They're right now just in the process of finalizing 13 recommendations, which are, as Representative Brown says, identify some needs, some urgent housing needs, identify some priorities, and is also taking a look at how some sort of a coordinated body, after the Market Council sunsets in March, can continue to interface on policy and program service delivery. Part of that whole process is also looking at efficiencies in government, and we're recognizing that you all are looking at some of the fiscal considerations of HFC and are looking at what are we going to do with less resources at a legislative level. And so what we're hoping to do is tomorrow the council begin to analyze some of the housing policy's recommendations, and then also have the Housing Policy Committee finalize that, and that can dovetail with some of the fiscal analysis that you all are conducting of HFC. Now, the Market Council's got the agency heads on its board as a council, and I think the idea is that we really do want to have some consensus around the most efficient delivery system. I think that given the constraints that we have in terms of trying to put something together for the next legislative session, that our staff, the Market Council staff, is scrambling as hard as they can to try to look at some of the fiscal implications of Representative Brown's proposal, a housing commission, or maybe even a couple of other alternatives. And Peggy Stewart is also here in the audience, and she's on staff to the Market Council now, and is one of her jobs is to analyze both organizationally as well as fiscally some of those issues. We really don't have a lot of time between now and January, and what we were hoping is that this body would consider, along with the agencies, maybe providing some assistance in that fiscal review that we're taking as far as our alternatives are concerned. And I'm sort of throwing this on the table, but recognizing that what we really need are some assistance in pulling together some of the operational costs associated with some of these proposals that we have.
Senator Rohde.
Mr. Chairman, first with regard to Cynthia's suggestion for support from the council, I think that for the council from the committee, I think that's appropriate. It is important that we arrive in Juneau with an agenda worthy of debate, and it takes people and time and man and woman hours to put it together. On the topic of combined agencies, I would urge some caution, and I think the proposal is worthy of debate during the session. Several areas of caution. First, the HFC.
Could you have people speaking to the the mic. I heard Kay really well, but everybody else is cutting out.
Is it switch up or down, Roger?
Yeah, he's got it up.
It's on.
Check and see.
Thank you.
Can you hear better now? Several areas of caution. First, there are different missions for AHFC and ASHA. One is social service. AHFC is not intended to be social service. Secondly, the financial ramifications of what's done with AHFC could be profound. We have a $5 billion corporation. That's $5 billion of public money. And if we do anything to affect the bond rating of AHFC, it will cost hundreds of millions of dollars to every Alaskan in terms of the capital of AHFC. We need to be very, very cautious. AHFC has a better bond rating than the state does, by the way. So I would just urge some caution. Of the 53,000 mortgage holders representing approximately 150,000 Alaskans, if we make an error in judgment, it will have a negative impact on the ability of those people to sell their homes and will virtually freeze the existing housing inventory because there are very few options other than AHFC for a person who wishes to sell their home. It would have absolutely disastrous effects. It would have effects equal to the price plunge in oil that we saw. So I would urge extreme caution and a very thorough look at the fiscal ramifications of what we do.
Yes, Randy?
Comment too, and that is, I think you better take a look at the proposal in which we just selected the contract, because one of the missions is to privatize Alaska Housing Finance. And if that happens, then you know it won't be on the board because it'll be entirely in private hands.
Okay. Senator Smansky.
That's an intriguing thought. I guess I'm more curious about how the proposal came up, and what similarities in missions between the two you saw. Okay.
Well, I certainly recognize the difference in missions, and when you say AHFC is not a social service mission, I think it does have some programs that are aimed at helping people acquire home ownership for the first time.
Okay, I'll be the first one to admit that AHFC is a big social service agency. We subsidize housing from the beginning to the end, and if that's not a social service function, I don't know what is. So I'll disagree with Patrick. It's the only difference is we hand out those checks and subsidy payments every month to everybody that's from $100,000 income level down to zip. So it's just a big giveaway.
I don't disagree with that.
Yeah.
So we'll agree that we got social.
The
difference in the way we hand out the checks.
Okay.
We call them welfare checks in some places.
Yeah, I'm just thinking more about our housing programs, our housing policy in a more holistic way. What are we trying to accomplish? And clearly your group is looking at what are we trying to accomplish for the long term with AHFC? How can we make that be a financially sound, viable institution into the future, assuming we want to maintain this access to capital ability? Whether or not we continue to subsidize it, there still seems to be a role for accessing that capital. But the issues of what kind of conditions do people live in, and are we doing what we could be doing? Are we getting the greatest bang for our buck? Are we coordinating our programs most effectively? Nobody is really looking at that. We have a lot of very fragmented programs, and I don't know all the history about how it came to be organized the way that it is, but it certainly is fragmented presently. And, you know, we have some of the worst housing conditions probably anywhere in the United States, particularly in rural Alaska. There are a lot of interrelated problems. There are a lot of problems that relate to other service programs of the state and other agencies. And, you know, one of the comments made to me was, well, what we really need is for the governor's office to have a task force and, you know, have a mini-cabinet kind of structure that's going to figure this out and give it some direction. And I think what the Housing Policy Development Committee was searching for was some kind of structure to carry through on some of these policy recommendations. I guess the starting point would be, if you don't agree with the recommendations and you don't think there's a problem, then you probably think the status quo is fine. But if you think that something ought to be happening out in the future to do our programs differently than we do them today, then how are we going to accomplish that? And it seemed to me that having a board that had the authority not just to look and recommend, but to actually direct the agencies under it to take action and to modify regulations and to set priorities in terms of where the dollars go, would be a good step, and that it's not a particularly radical idea to have two boards or, you know, two entities reporting to one board. And I think it would move in the direction of streamlining things rather than creating more entities out there that have similar responsibilities. So I guess my idea was, can we streamline it? Can we make it more effective? And, you know, what are the practical obstacles that these agencies might have if we were to try to do something like that? And so far, I guess I haven't heard any real convincing reasons other than we certainly don't want to do anything that would affect its financial standing, but I don't understand why this proposal of just having a single board overseeing both agencies would necessarily have that effect. So I think it depends on, I guess a lot of it's perception and so on of how other people perceive what we're doing. But I think if you look at models in other states, and Cynthia and her group have done some looking at that, there are a lot of other states that have housing commissions or departments or consolidated management of their housing programs, and I think ours is not very effective the way that it's presently running and organized.
Thank you. My comments would be is I think that this proposal is consistent with for debate for the objectives of what this task force is trying to accomplish. That's to provide a long-term policy recommendation to the legislature concerning Alaska Housing Finance Corporation, as well as the other state involvement in our other loan programs. So, I look forward to receiving anything that comes from the council on that. My comment would further be that we would like to see all the debate that takes place within the council, because you do have a pretty broad spectrum of representation there. And surely the kinds of issues that Senator Rohde and Senator Smansky brought up and Representative Phillips are worthy of being involved in that debate, and would help this task force at least in being able to review some of that, because I'm sure that my biggest question was, are we going to convolute the missions and at the same time recognizing that you need to have some consistent housing policy, but you need to examine those missions? And my question would also be, would that be overwhelming for two boards, mm-hmm. or to bring all those issues to one board? Mm-hmm. So I say that the sooner we could get that, the better, especially give us time to review that, and so that each of us had the opportunity to ask further questions. So I guess what I'm saying is I think it's something that we do need to look at. Cynthia?
Thanks. To that end, I think that you can rest assured we'll have full debate within the council on the variety of options that are being presented. And I also think that, again, you might wish to direct your consultant to take a look at some of these options with us, because we think that the financial and fiscal implications need to be studied as well, and they need to be provided to you to provide that background as part of the debate.
Yes. Thank you. It's one of the things on the end of the agenda today. One of the things I'm going to bring up is the task force involvement with the consultant on a continuing basis, and we can have that discussion at that time. But it's pretty consistent with what I said earlier, that it's not my intention for us to walk away now while the consultant's gathering information. So if you would stay, you'll hear that debate among us as to how we're going to be involved, and at least my ideas of how we're going to go about that. But we look forward to that. Mike?
Last but not least, I think it's a good idea to take a look at it. I think that there's probably a lot of merit to, if you're going to rework AHFC and you're create something new, then it probably should be done in such a way that maybe we need to look at the entire picture of housing. And if it's congregate housing for seniors, then so be it. Because, I mean, it's hard for me to justify subsidizing $60,000 a year incomes on individuals when I've got senior citizens sitting out there with substandard housing, and then tell them that the answer to it is we can't afford it. I have a tough time doing that, and so I'm not too sure we shouldn't look at the full spectrum, and And I guess we have to be real careful about what we're dealing with, because as Senator Rohde said, and he's probably, I know he'll tell me, as he's written the law, that it's a very delicate operation out there, and this bond rating thing is probably the one thing that drives most of it more than anything else. But whether or not there's a way that you can be innovative in financing them, I think we're going to have to look at some innovative approaches in the future, whether it's leveraging part of the portfolio or putting it into a position where you can't. There's nothing that says that senior housing is going to can't pay its own way, too. It's just on how you structure it.
Are you making an introduction for Representative Ulmer here, Mike? Or
I forgot. She's down on the list, too.
I'd like to recognize Representative Ulmer. Fran, are you with us? Fran?
Did you see this?
Mary, are you still there?
I got bored.
We lost them.
Another congregate housing, I just saw this coming in the mail. It's the Kenai project.
We need it.
Same sort of thing, but
I mean, that's a perfect example.
It is. No.
Are you back online? Oh, man.
Shoot. I've been totally unimpressed with our Jerome Bridge teleconference system.
Is this thing getting louder?
It is the string and can system that has been, it's probably frustrated more citizens than the entire legislature put together, and that's right. A big statement.
Can we just take about a 5-minute break to see? Fran's waiting to make a presentation.
Is it possible to roll these things together somehow? Is there some structure, Patrick?
I got to be in the order of it.
Yes.
You'll make it.
What time you need?
Allow
you to maintain a...
Well, let's just take 5 minutes.
To maintain the integrity of the overall...
maintain the bond rating is what the financial
bond rating.
Probably the question is how whether it's going to be duplicative or not. But the larger question of having a coordinated housing policy, as Kate pointed out, is one that
in my mind, I'm having a tough time. It goes back to that old subsidy question. If X dollars are being expended out there in subsidy, whatever that X dollars are annually. I don't know. The HFC can tell us tomorrow, right? I mean, they can tell us annually exactly how many millions of dollars a year we subsidize housing with under HFC. If you're going to shift a portion of that to a different portion of the need market with the same risk factor attached to it, and let me tell you, I've never seen an elderly housing project go broke yet in the state. I mean, they just don't go belly up. These guys are around.
The baby boom's getting older.
Yeah, the baby boom's getting... If you can shift a portion of that to that other area, then it seems to me to make, and that's just a policy call.
Right.
It's not anything more than that. Or if it's in another area. But I don't know how you do that.
I don't either, under the existing structure. Because you have these, with the HFC subsidies, they're built into the statute.
What we need to change.
So if we change that, and then if we, it might be able to set up a structure where HFC did nothing but accessing the capital market and even have them be more autonomous or spin them off and have the social service issues be dealt with under a board that would be set up for that purpose. I think that makes a lot of sense.
A good chunk of HFC subsidy has gone to low-income people who are actually the working low-income people. And what distinguishes HFC from other programs is the participants in HFC meet certain credit criterion, allegedly, for repayment, and are able to do that. And we're dealing with people in other programs that can't meet a reasonable credit requirement, and that is a distinguishing factor. I won't argue that it's not a subsidy to middle class Alaskans. We bought down the interest rates when they were 23%, and it continued. It was a policy of the legislature. We need to get rid of the subsidy as soon as it's rational. I would like to do it quicker than the HFC, but...
Excuse me, Representative Twycamera. I have Representative Ulmer on mic.
Great. How about Mary? Is she still there? Mary, are you awake? Can you hear us?
We have to put some money into a new system. With all the digitalized, computerized electronics that we have. This system is straight out of the 1950s. I mean, Ernest Greening
uses this microphone.
No. We heard her say that she's online. I says, hello. And Mary either fell asleep or...
Mary went off the air. She said she only heard one out of every five words she just gave up and left.
Oh.
But Fran Ulmer is supposed to be on right now.
Fran?
You got your button on?
Yes. Fran? I hear somebody. Somebody else try to speak in there.
Is everybody else locked down?
I'm locked.
We're all off. Because sometimes that'll screw it up if you have more than one on at a time.
Hello?
Fran?
Hi, Swag.
Okay, you can hear us. You need to cough or something. I'm going to let you go ahead and make your presentation. Senator Desmanski just walked out of the room. But before we lose you again...
Swag, you are breaking up very badly. If you can hear me, I think what you just said was that I should go ahead with a brief presentation. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay, great. I'll make this very short, but thank you very much for the opportunity to talk to your committee. Just very briefly, House Bill 218 addresses the need for senior housing in Alaska, and it does so by making use of an existing entity, the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation. I have been approached by seniors, both here in Juneau and elsewhere around the state, that have expressed a need for some kind of housing which is not as intense as a Pioneer's home, but yet recognizes their needs for some physical things that are very different than standardized housing. And this bill really tries to set in motion a response by the private sector to meet the needs of seniors in Alaska. It seemed to me that given our diminishing revenues over the next decade or so, it would not be realistic for the state to get in the business of building a lot more senior housing around the state. So it seemed to me it would be a good idea to simply open the door so that the private sector could come forward, and that might be nonprofits and it might be for-profits. But what this bill simply does is provide a financing mechanism for those entities that might be out there willing to give congregate housing a try. The bill would simply provide that AHFC could make loans for senior housing, senior congregate housing, and it would enable them to do so not only for new construction, but also for the repair or remodeling or rehabilitation of existing residential housing. That was included so that those communities that might have a surplus of housing might have an opportunity to simply retrofit some of it to meet the needs, the special needs of seniors. This bill does provide for an additional subsidy for that kind of senior housing. But it is a relatively modest subsidy if you compare it to what would be required if the state were actually going to upfront financially construct these senior congregate housing areas for seniors around the state of Alaska. So in a nutshell, it simply uses an existing entity, AHFC. It allows financing for this kind of senior congregate housing, either new or repair and remodel of existing. And it gives a small interest subsidy to act as an encouragement to have this happen by the private sector, private, public, or nonprofit. There is a proposed substitute for this bill, I might add, SWAC, that would expand it to be a bill that would provide nonprofits the ability to borrow money from AHFC to do congregate housing for other purposes beyond seniors. And I guess I'll just mention there are a number of entities around the state, everything from mental health to physical, people with physical problems that need congregate housing, and that currently, unless they're fortunate enough to get a grant, there's no place for them to go to get a loan to provide this kind of congregate housing. And in my conversations with other people in the state, they have said, why don't you just modify 218 so that it's not just for seniors, it's for any entity for congregate housing done by a nonprofit to be able to meet
granted deeds for congregate housing. So that's an option for the committee to consider as well. With that, I'll be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Thank you, Fran. Before I recognize the other members, I do have a couple of questions. Three, as a matter of fact. The first one is, what are the limits of subsidy? Is there a bottom and a top, and exactly how do you envision that working?
There are no proposed limits of bottom or top in the bill at the present time, and I think that in part reflects that congregate housing can be as small as a duplex being retrofitted for three or four seniors, or it may be as large as a whole condominium project that is being built for senior housing. So I guess what I'm saying is there would be quite a range of the size of the project. So unless I don't know at this point how you would do limits in terms of bottom or top. This is just proposed as a percentage point reduction. I'm proposing in 218 is not really in conflict with using other programs for specific projects like that federal program and perhaps like the Kenai project. This simply, 218 just opens the door so that if in a community it makes sense to either a nonprofit or a private developer to go forward, they work out what the numbers are and they think that the rents will be adequate to do it. This gives them a source of cash to finance that project where currently they really don't have one.
Okay, well, the third question I've got, and I'm trying to figure out the right way to ask this question. One of the concerns I have is the entity in which the money is being borrowed. For instance, a nonprofit. If we have an entity that is not a person but is a corporation, especially a nonprofit corporation, what is the questions come up about solvency of that nonprofit, number one. Number two, what does this do to the bond rating overall, you know, considering the fact that the portfolio and the bonds that are issued obviously have a lot to do with the security behind that. So did you have any discussions in any of the committees as to what the criteria is going to be?
No, the committee hearings that I've participated in have not gotten to that level of detail. My guess is that it would be necessary to get some advice from HFC and perhaps from bond counsel, and I do not have the answers to that, but there may be a need to have either in statutes or perhaps in implementing regulations something regarding how you deal with nonprofits and either looking to other assets that those nonprofits may have or requiring additional deposits so that you're not really putting the state's general bond issue under HFC at risk. But I know we have not gotten to that level.
Okay. Thanks. Mary, are you still with us?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, thanks. Senator Rody? Senator Smansky got pulled out. Randy Phillips had to leave, but we still have a legal meeting because we had a quorum, except for if we have to come to a vote. So I'd like to go ahead and continue. Are there other questions of Representative Ulmer? Mary, did you have any questions?
No, thank you.
Yeah. Kind of smug down there where you don't have to answer, right?
That's true. I too got lobbied by your Kenai mayor a few weeks ago, so he's
right. Let me clarify something so that everybody. The Kenai proposal basically is they're looking for state monies to build a facility. Then the city of Kenai has proposed that they will take all responsibility after it's built, which obviously is very attractive considering what the costs are for any facility that's built. That is their proposal. They've just left a small task to the two of us to figure out where the money's going to come from. So. We'll deal with that, but it's a little different than what Fran's proposing. I did want to tell you about one other private concern that has explored FHA. Man, I get all these things confused. It's Farm Home Administration, and that they're looking at congregate housing in the Kenai area as a private concern, based upon what you just stated, Fran, the federal subsidy, if these are offered to lower income seniors. And so that is something that probably may or may not come about. But there is at least one concern that I'm aware of that is looking at that to be consistent with your approach here. Are you aware of any in other places in the state?
Swank, I really am not. I think that there is a fair amount of interest in several communities to try to come up with some sort of senior congregate housing, but I think that people have yet to really kind of discern what the financing mechanism is, what the best entity for running it is, and whether or not it's realistic given our declining revenue situation to be in the business of doing any more building. And I guess that was my one concern when your mayor spoke to the committee. It was sort of like, yes, it's a very attractive option to have it real clear that the state would have no responsibility in operating it, but even if the municipality is operating it, I mean, as we know, through revenue sharing and municipal assistance, it's sort of like it's still state government. And that's why I was so intrigued to begin with this concept, which is in 218, of saying let's let government stay out of it to the maximum extent possible. Let's see if we just provide a financing mechanism, not go off and build these things, but just say, okay, if you need money, we'll give you a slight interest break, but what they mainly just need is access to capital. And if the private sector has that opportunity extended to it, I mean, let's give it a couple of years, and if it doesn't work and if it doesn't solve the problem, well, then maybe we can step forward and solve it in some other way. But it just seemed to me, given the experience that other states have had with the private sector meeting the needs of congregate housing for seniors, that we ought to try that as a first step.
Okay, well, thank you, Fran. We do have Senator Szymanski back. Okay, well, thank you very much, and we will keep this...
Who is that, Fran?
Yes, proposals. Fran just finished her presentation.
Great job, Fran.
Thanks, Mike.
Hey, did they tell you I did a pre-introduction on you?
They told me that you needed to leave and do something very important.
Yeah, I had to go talk to a banker.
Well, Swag, I'm going to sign off, but thanks very much for giving me the opportunity to talk to you about this, and please give me a call if there's any additional information that would be helpful.
Okay, I'm sure we're going to have other questions, Fran.
Okay. Hey, Fran.
Thank you.
Hey, Fran, this is Szymanski.
Bye-bye.
Hey, Fran.
Yeah.
Before you go, I just looked over your memo on the ferry system, and I, not just about, well, half hour ago, and I just dropped you and Ayers a line on it.
Okay.
I think you're on target. I think there's some things that we're going to have to do to build the fire underneath some people.
Right. Well, to look at it, and I'll talk to you soon, okay?
Deal.
Great. Thank you.
Bye.
We could take care of our subsidy problem there, too, and save a little money.
Yeah, about the time you guys in Spinard start paying for Spinard Road,
gentlemen,
we wouldn't have a problem.
Gentlemen, I want to try to limit this debate to housing. Well, I can see that, it's going to be a full-time job. Hey, Mike, it's going to be a full-time job just keeping you guys on track. We're talking about housing, not ferries.
You don't think we have berthing capacity on there?
Yeah.
Hope it's improved since the last time I was on.
Okay, guys.
Yeah,
I'd like to...
If we can put the ferry system underneath the inches.
I want to talk a little bit about some proposed legislation. I have had the opportunity to talk to Senator Szymanski, and I'd like to tell you...
Is
one,
this what that is?
Yes. And would like to... yes, sir? Well, I'm glad. I want to tell you what drove me to this. And Mary, do you happen to have a copy of the legislation?
Yes, I do.
Okay. Basically, it's from constituents, and Senator Szymanski happened to be at the first part of that meeting, and he and Mike had to catch an airplane. But basically, what this bill is trying to address is to protect future mortgages by HFC through an inspection process. And the reason that we perceive that there's a problem, there's many documentation of now that houses are being repossessed, that they are way below acceptable standards, and in some instances cost up to $30,000 to get in to where they can be put back on the market. And so what we did was take a variety of people within my community, and I'll just tell you who was represented. If I can go back to my notes. The banking industry, the realtors, the insurance, the home builders, appraisers, municipal inspectors, helped in trying to put together what we felt was something responsible. So we tried to narrow our goal of having a reasonable inspection process that would ensure quality homes that are going to be mortgaged by state, I don't want to say that state finance, but it truly is a subsidized state mortgage, and to protect the consumer, considering in all fairness to HFC and to the banking industry, at the time that Alaska was in a building boom, nobody had the time to go out and do inspections, nor were there any requirements to do so. And so consequently, we have a portfolio of examples of what this legislation is trying to address. But we try to keep it simple, and based upon there are current inspections being done by the municipality of Anchorage, Kenai, Soldotna, Fairbanks. There's many municipalities that have existing inspection. We wanted to make it consistent with their, not to have a two-layer inspection process. And then we said, well, what standards are we going to use? And basically, the statutes that are quoted for these five inspections are, in fact, by the Uniform Building Code, UBC. Then the next issue that came up, well, where are we going to get the inspectors from? And so we talked about, and I gave my personal view on this, if my name appeared, they weren't going to be state employees, that they need to go to the private sector. So then we said, where do the standards come for people being qualified as inspectors? And so the input we received that we felt had the best existing program that could meet our needs, and I want to make sure I've got the, and we do have Ron Watts here that I'm going to ask to talk a little bit more about it. I just talked to him the other day. It's the International Conference of Building Officials, and they do have a certification process, and we do have certified officials, or we do have certified people in the state to do some of these, but in my quick analysis, there are not enough. So we do have something in place. We do have an indication, and would ask Ron to maybe elaborate a little bit more, that they would be willing to work with us in trying to get enough training up there so we can get adequate. I can tell you what some of my concerns are about this proposed legislation. First of all, that we have adequate regional representation throughout the state, so if we make a requirement that there are people that are able to do that job. For instance, if all the people that have the ability to do the inspecting are located in Anchorage, what happens to the people of Juneau, Ketchikan, Fairbanks, so forth? So we need to make sure that we have some, we have people that are able to do this, and we also need an adequate lead time, I think, to make sure that that training is made available. Most people I've talked to, is there's a lot of people that would be qualified engineers and architects that probably could take certain portions of the test and qualify. The other question that came up was, what is the cost to the consumer and where is it being forced? It appears, and I'll ask Mr. Watts to comment on that, that for the city of Soldotna and Kenai, it's about $430 for the municipal requirements, and it appears that we're looking at about $450 for that would be the top end for these kinds of inspections. So I laid this on the table for the task force to consider. I think it's a legitimate concern. I think it's something that if we're going to have AHFC mortgage homes, that we have a responsibility to make sure that these are good homes, that they are kinds of home that we expect. Are there any questions thus far?
We're still on telephone?
Yes.
Well, a quick question I had was the effective date of the requirement then would say that the requirement be imposed on all AHFC financing prospective. So there wouldn't be a retroactivity.
New construction.
All new construction after X effective date.
Yes.
Says if it's not built under and inspected underneath that condition, then you don't get a financing.
Right.
Mr. Chairman, your only glitch will come where the existing AHFC mortgages don't meet code and someone tries to sell them to somebody else with an AHFC mortgage, or it'll be probably have someone in our portfolio now that don't meet the standards, and they'll have to sell that home in the private market, which will make it difficult. It will be a problem. I just mentioned that as a potential concern, because I'm sure someone will bring
it up. What is your overall impression of this concept, I guess?
I think it's absolutely mandatory if we're going to maintain the quality of the portfolio. Quite frankly, all of us have presumed that this has been done all along, and it has been to a large extent in your major municipalities. But even there, the inspection process has not been perhaps what it should in some cases, and we're seeing that in some of the foreclosures.
Right. I think it's foreclosures that kind of drove me to this when I start looking at the bills that HFC's having to pay to bring these houses in, so trying to correct that problem. There's still a lot of questions with this, but I wanted to put it on the table so that people could get some feedback. I wonder if I could ask Mr. Watts to come up, because I did have a conversation with him the other day and asking about the help that we could expect to receive from the people that we're asking to do the certification. Mr. Watts?
I'll introduce myself. I'm Ron Watts. I actually work for the municipality of Anchorage. I also represent the Alaska Professional Design Council as the task force chairman for a effort that we have had going on now for about 5 years to attempt to get reasonable codes and inspection services for structures, primarily buildings, in the state of Alaska. At this point in time, there are actually no complete series of building codes for the state of Alaska. There are bits and pieces spread out through about 9 or 10 different departments, and it is a real problem that local jurisdictions have to contend with, that the private sector in terms of design, the contractors, etc., have to contend with. It is something that desperately needs to be addressed. I think this would be a very excellent first step in addressing that particular problem in terms of housing. I understand the limitations there in terms of location, availability of qualified people to do it. If we take, as an example, in the International Conference of Building Officials, is an organization made up of jurisdictions, municipalities, states, counties, etc., across the country. The primary purpose being the formulation of codes, putting them together, having them available for local jurisdictions to consider for adoption and enforcement. The input into those codes and the code changes are strictly by private individuals, private organizations, public organizations, as well as enforcement agencies within jurisdictions. The mechanism does exist for training for this type of need, whether it be housing or whether it be a combination of housing and commercial structures. If the bill went through, similar to what's proposed, and was permitted to allow people of the architectural engineering, as well as local jurisdictions, able to do this type of service for a particular fee, whether it be within their jurisdiction or not within the jurisdiction, and whether they were permitted to do it on their own time outside of jurisdiction or on jurisdictional time, it still could work, and the capacity is there if the training and the certification were put into effect. And that could be done not quickly and not easily, and for sure not at no cost, but I think it could be done at a reasonable cost, and provide the mechanism then, therefore, to have for the lending institutions and for AHFC to be able to at least rely on some kind of basic requirement or a basic set of guidelines, statutes, requirements, or whatever they might be, in order to ensure that the structures meet at least minimum acceptable standards. I will be the first to admit, even within the municipality of Anchorage, and I think, and naturally I would be somewhat biased if I didn't think so, but I think we probably have the best services in that respect going within the state. And I'll admit right up front that we've got some real deficiencies, and there's things to get by because inspectors cannot be on the job all the time. There's things that they get concealed, covered up, that may be somewhat marginal in terms of the soils, the foundation systems, but yet is within minimum code. And I might, just for the benefit of those that may not know, codes are actually not optimum. Codes are minimum. And there are minimum standards that are set forth. And if a structure is strictly built and complies, and you hear it all the time, oh, gee, my building meets code. Well, I tell you, if your building doesn't do more than just meet code, then it's probably a very marginal building, honestly. So codes are only minimum. And if a designer and a builder, developer, wishes to only comply with minimum code, then, again, it's marginal, no question. But even within a municipality, there are definitely problems. There are structures that, unfortunately, have had defects show up that should never have been permitted or should never have gotten by. So it's not a fail-safe mechanism by no means, but at least it's a first step of minimizing something that otherwise, and I've looked at structures myself outside inspection areas, and I'll have to admit, some, well, honestly, there's no excuse for them being permitted, and for sure with the amount of cost and the subsidy that's going in, that plain blank, someone got ripped off. And so it would only be a mechanism for ensuring, and in particular, if it were outlined and defined, and there's no way that it's going to be able to be structured that a so-called something like a certificate of occupancy could be issued after inspections were done, because it's not financially feasible to perform and to do it properly on every residential structure. You, depending on size, you will run somewhere between 14 and 19 or 20 inspections per every individual structure to do the complete thorough inspection services. So it's not going to be reasonably feasible within the state, at least outside of local jurisdictions, to have that many inspections. But if the basic soils and foundation system were inspected, the basic structural, I'm talking about framing, the electrical and mechanical plumbing, at least in rough stages, which is probably more critical than actual final, and then maybe insulation. But if you can narrow it down to the areas that create the greatest potential problem and hazard and ensure that that get accomplished, then I think it's a giant step forward.
Questions? Linda?
Yeah, what do you estimate the cost would be per home?
Well, I think Representative Swackhammer and I talked about that. Again, it would depend on location. It would depend on the number of inspections. So that could range anywhere from a couple hundred dollars to several hundred.
I might be able to respond to that, Glenda. That was one of my concerns, the consumer cost. And we used comparative what the costs were for Kenai and Slotin, and they're running $400 and some dollars within the municipality. They figured about $450. But again, some of the concerns I got is the effect on rural loans and the availability of inspectors for rural Alaska and adequate regional representation. Are there questions, Mr. Watts?
No, but I'll throw one in. Just Commerce is going to have a fiscal note on the certification and testing of inspectors in here, right?
No.
Who's going to do certification and testing?
Okay, that's maybe Mr. Watts. So what we are looking at is the International Conference of Building Officials, which is an international organization that already has a certification process in place and is recognized nationally. And they've already got the testing procedures and so forth. So we look at it as not coming in and having to build a bureaucracy. There's already an existing.
So the inspectors will not be
state employees.
Not state employees, that's what I'm saying, but they will not be recognized by the state.
Yes. Well,
how are they going to be recognized by the state?
By showing up with a certificate.
By certification.
By statute,
process.
They'll walk up with another certificate, but it won't have to be done by the Commerce.
No.
At this point, it's not. In fact, the people that are certified are not registered with the state. This long term solution that we see to the overall problem of codes and design was attempting to say that not only should there be codes on the state books that the architects, engineers, and builders were required and obligated to design and build by, but also the people that were doing the design as well as those that were doing inspection, etc., be certified and registered with the state, and therefore all of the associated licensing that would go with design, construction, and inspections would hopefully be done by some organization that ultimately would be a consolidated organization within one of the departments within the state. And that was the thrust of a bill, which was Senate Bill 300, that went and was out about 2 years ago. And that really never went very far, and it definitely didn't go to a vote simply because of the problem of the state administration could not, one, would not support the concept because they didn't want to pull out the different entities within the different departments for consolidation. But ultimately what was hoped out of that, and sometime in the future, hopefully still will be, because one, we're looking at more efficiency, two, we're looking at an organization that could do the type thing we're needing to do here, that could assist any other state department, HFC or whatever it might be, in all aspects of design construction. And that licensing and all that be tied together. But at this point, there is not a requirement, and people that are certified on a national level and maintained out of the national headquarters in California and published on that roster.
Does it take much to become an inspector?
Well, you don't have to have a degree to get certified. It's done strictly based on experience and examination. And I would have to say that for sure it's less rigorous than the architectural and the engineering. However, it's not something that every contractor can go down and do, I can tell you assuredly on that, because I've taken too many of them myself. It's something that anyone that has an interest and knowledge in construction with some effort can study and pass. It's primarily a written examination, and consisting of either a 4-hour block or an 8-hour block all day, depending on what category you get into. But there are categories for what's called building, which is primarily structural, categories for electrical, categories for mechanical. abatement for specials in welding, concrete, steel, reinforced masonry, and fire code.
Of the five that we've listed, plan approval, is that separate?
Yes, there's also one on plan approval.
Footings and foundation is one?
A person could possibly, yes, a person could, one individual could do that, no question.
Electrical, plumbing, and framing, are they three certifications?
Well, let me state that there is the mechanism for going what's called a combination. However, there are very few people that have enough experience, knowledge, and capability to take the examinations in the structural and in the mechanical, electrical, and plumbing. And that's primarily what the categories are for the combination. It is theoretically possible, yes.
Theoretically possible.
But
what
not
is the likelihood of the general contractor out there who is a home building contractor being able to become certified as a and being able to perform the five stages? What's the likelihood of him or the guy that owns his private contracting company out there to be able to do it? And I guess the reason I'm looking at that is going right back to what, when we looked at this once before, one of the biggest things that killed it was the ability in remote areas outside of the general population areas to be able to perform these inspections at a reasonable cost. And the immediate answer that comes back is SWAC, and I say to ourselves, well, seeing we've got these five here, we would expect some contractor, two or three contractors in Wasilla, or five or six, or some guy in Talkeetna, to just go off and go through a 40-hour course or 80-hour course and get certified in this area so that he then would not inspect his own work, but he'd inspect somebody else, and it'd be kind of a self-generating thing. Is that unrealistic?
No, it's not unrealistic, and it can be done, but again, for sure, the training would have to be provided, which is available. It's just a matter of organizing and setting up, and of course, like I said, there would be a cost in order to do that. It's not unreasonable. But in order to organize, first of all, there are existing courses that are available. They would have to be pulled together, organized and tailored for the geographical needs, and the instructors put in place. But to answer your question, bottom line, yes, it can be done. And everyone, I can tell you surely, everyone would not be able to qualify, but those that had the experience and the aptitude with some training could do it.
Are you familiar with the Alaska Craftsman Home Builders Association certification program?
Yes, sir, I am.
Is a graduate of that program functionally capable of meeting the five conditions we impose?
Without some additional training, at least in the electrical, mechanical, plumbing area, I would say no, not. Generally in the structural side, yes, for sure. I think the deficiency would be, again, in the specialties of the electrical and the mechanical plumbing.
Mike, I might share with you, if I can, some of the comments that were made. We had as many as 16 people show up at Kenai when we were drafting this, and there were a lot of people that were in the building trade itself that were familiar with the requirements by the International Conference of Building Officials. That felt that they, with very little homework, would be able to pass several of these tests. They would have to study more, but most of these people were home builders themselves, and they felt that they would be able to qualify with some training. So that's why I raised the question about regional representation and being able to work with this organization and trying to have enough lead time so that we don't make the requirement cumbersome.
Yeah, all I'm looking at is here is if we've got five basic inspections, and most of them inspect, the major ones are your electrical, your plumbing, framing, probably footings and foundation, but plan approval also. If we impose that tomorrow, first thing that really comes into mind is we're probably going to have to phase this in over a period of time. We're going to have to put some conditions that allow it to be built up. But I can see that, take Talkeetna as an example, the chances of having an inspector that can do these five of them available in Talkeetna are slim to none in the near future. But they build and will be building, because we now have new water and sewer systems, HFC, hopefully certifiable homes. The cost of commuting back to me, that's a long distance. Go to Talkeetna, that's a day trip up and back.
There's some other questions too.
I've got to figure out, I got to think through the scenario on how we implement that so it really works.
The reason I put it on the table was to get some reaction.
Didn't we try this once before though? Somewhere, didn't we have a bill in?
This has been talked about, Roland. The essential concern is that you're using public money to finance a structure, and if that structure doesn't meet minimum requirements, you're stealing money from the public.
And
I understand your concern, and I'm sure we can, work out some agreement or arrangement where the remoteness of the location is taken into consideration. But what I don't want to do is see us lessen standards or provide a greater opportunity for public monies to be lost through the financing of inadequate structures that ultimately come back to take a portion of the...
But let me just be a realist. I've worked this area indirectly on another bill, which is my bill that I put in. It's now sitting in finance. We'll probably move through this year. That will require Alaskan Home Builder Craftsman Certification Program. Even in that bill, though, to when we were including AHFC underneath it, there was quite a scream coming out, and that's fairly easy to get certified. There was quite a scream from slightly remote community people. Eliason had some real major concerns with it out of Southeastern.
I said, some of the concerns are not only regional, but we need to know how many AHFC loans are out in rural Alaska, or what you call Homer is another example that is kind of remote.
But it's on the highway system, so you're no longer underneath, right?
Pardon?
You don't get the non-conforming, do you?
No, I'm not speaking about the non-conforming. This only applies to AHFC loans.
Right.
I don't think there's any question. There's probably going to be some locations within the state that it's going to be very impractical to enforce this, and that's something that I don't know anything about in terms of how it would be worded or structured, but the fact that if you could cover, I don't know, as an example, hypothetically, 80%, as Senator has kind of alluded to, if we only covered 80%, then that's better than we've got going
I
now.
I
wholeheartedly
support the concept.
I'm trying to get some reaction. I do have some reaction from some of the industry. And the only reason my name is on it is because somebody had to ask for a draft. If it's a desire of the task force to have a task force bill, I'm certainly willing to do that. But I felt that we need to have the discussion if we're going to try to protect the future mortgages. And one of my concerns, quite frankly, was from a consumer point of view, how much is reasonable to protect a $100,000 investment? And I felt from the numbers that we give me, $450 is reasonable. It's consistent within the municipalities. And if, in fact, it drove the cost up, then I'd have to re-examine that. But I know, for instance, that let's say that HFC represented a private person, okay? You've got to see some of these examples, and I'll have this portfolio to you, but I'll tell you, it just scare you to death. Some of the costs that are coming in and refurbishing these homes, what if you own that home and you're trying to go sell it? So that was the reason I brought this issue to the table. I'd just like to see how other people felt about it. Please, you're not going to offend me by saying that you think there's problems.
Let me.
Glenda?
Well, I just wanted to tell you that the Housing Policy Development Committee has placed this issue as one of their recommendations, at least preliminary recommendations, and that is that your bill specifically addresses one of the recommendations that this group has come up with. And included in that group are some developers. But I think pretty much everybody's realized we need to strengthen the construction codes or the construction requirements, building codes. And as you both say, if we're going to invest state money, so we have a right to say we're not going to finance uninhabitable places. HFC is going to lose millions of dollars on some of the particularly condos, particularly in Anchorage, that they're having major problems with right now. But they may not get compensated for magic.
Mary, could we get a reaction from you? Are you awake?
So I'm awake. It reminded me of discussions that we've had in looking at the energy policy also. The energy community is very concerned that we adopt better building standards and as a result save some money in the bush as well as elsewhere by making more energy efficient homes as well as more safely constructed homes. It makes common sense.
Yes. Thanks, Mary.
I would like to add a comment to this that it's encouraging, and in light of the recent earthquake in San Francisco and structural conditions that it brought to light to us, at least in Asha, we were looking at during the earthquake time, we just happened to be away with other public housing officials that were worried about their structures in their buildings, that having the good codes and having them be enforced pays in the long run. So I'm encouraged by this.
Just well, I think it's a good comment. And the question is whether or not we should make our codes more stringent. Because as was pointed out, they are a minimum. And the question is whether, for Alaska, they're too much of a minimum. I know Senator Smansky and I have both been involved in the construction industry, and I've seen there's some awful shoddy stuff out there, and I wonder whether even code's enough, but
I can answer that one for you. First of all, even though codes are minimum, they are designed, in particular when it comes to fire and life safety, that it's acceptable for the assumed risk that any community is willing to take. And as far as seismic goes, the requirements in all of the codes to ensure that that structure will meet a reasonably good performance on seismic, that yes, they are acceptable and do meet that. So I don't think you have to worry about changing in codes or anything. I just want to throw out one comment. Just to give you a magnitude of the cost of the overall construction, in terms of inspections in relation to the full cost of a structure, the total permit and inspection fees generally will run somewhere, depending on the community, somewhere between 0.5% and 2% of the total cost of that structure. So I guess I would have to say that is not an unreasonable insurance for at least hopefully obtaining minimum standards.
Okay. Thank you, Ron.
That's the range that you normally would find.
Pat?
No questions.
Thank you very much.
I agree with
any comments?
No, I would just concur with what Joanne and you all have said. I'm encouraged. I think that this is the direction we need to be moving in.
If we have a time frame set forward of effective, I don't know, as Representative Sarkhammer had said earlier, maybe of 1991, then there's more than adequate lead time to organize, set up, train, certify, whatever. So that, you know, if we had an effective date of July of 90, then it might be a little different situation. But if we're looking at a year plus, then there's absolutely no reason why it can't be done and handled on a private sector, and if there were some at least funds to supplement in and cover the training, then I honestly don't see any.
I did have a conversation with AHFC management, and they are in general support of this concept. Some of the questions I've got is I need to know exactly how many loans or anticipated loans that are going to be in this regional area that Senator Szymanski pointed out. You know, we just need to have some of those answers so that we can address that. And that's when this issue was talked about, people wanted to include the conventional Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae and the rest of them. And I said, it's my humble opinion, let's take a little bit at a time and let's not bite off more than we can.
There's the whole question of the remoter locations is a delicate balance, because when you have one on one hand, people saying, well, you know, where inspections are difficult. On the other hand, you have public money, and they're saying, we want you to take more of a chance with public money on us than with somebody else. And can we ethically do that?
Right.
Is that really a proper judgment? We're supposed to be guardians of the, you know, public monies, and is it really right good to do that? It's, as Edward Abbott at Playwrights, a delicate right balance.
Even if you talk about the Kodiak area, I mean, there's contractors there. All they have to do is come in and get training. I don't think it's unreasonable. Even in smaller communities, I think they'll be able to do it. It's just they don't want to do it.
I can tell you what the status is now. This has been circulated to bankers, realtors, insurance, home builders, title companies, architectures. I met with Representative Lehman today and talked. He's an engineer, to get his response. Appraisers. And I still have the unions and that to go, but hopefully within the next 30 days, I'll have some input, which leads me to the next. Do we want to meet in December? What are the plans for the committee?
I'm available to the call of the chair.
You're not going anywhere on vacation?
I'll finish the Supreme Court case on the 1st, so, and I won't. But won't be going any place the first week or so in December. Many people do travel, so perhaps the earlier in December.
I was looking at the 5th, and the things that... It's just you and I, Pat, so I can tell you.
I've heard that before.
Yeah, really. What I would... And one of the issues I wanted to bring up was that now we have a consultant. It looks like Monday, the appeal process, or the appeal time is through. It was my intent to have... RA that is working with this task force to work with a consultant so that it, and I don't want this taken negatively, but I've seen a lot of things that you ask a consultant to do and they come back and you're looking for a horse and they come back with an elephant. So along that line, I would just like to make sure that we're kind of walking in the same step, and also some of the comments that were made earlier, and I'm trying to remember who made them, that had other questions that may be appropriate to this issue.
I think your suggestion is important. It's essential that the institutional knowledge that several of the staff people have be imparted to the consultants as quickly as possible.
Okay. So I will draft a letter saying to the consultant that we'd ask that he become a member of their team, so to speak, so that he could walk with them. The other issue that I'd like to maybe see if Cynthia... Is it possible by the 5th of September to have any feedback on the proposal that you and Katie talked about today?
Oh, December.
Yes.
I think it's possible, yeah. Again, I think it's critical if the consultant's working that they work along with us as well.
Okay.
But we are scheduled at this point to have a final meeting on the 8th of the housing policy. We're going to have two other meetings, and so I think we'll
have some numbers too that Peggy's working on, so she'll be working out fiscal.
Right. What I anticipate is that when the consultant lays the options on the table, that we're looking at a pretty intensified debate in a fairly short period of time. Considering that if we can get it mailed out by the first week in January, give people some opportunity to look at those options and then start the debate about the middle of January, it would be the chair's intention to
try to get this debate and put something on the table no less than the 15th of February into both bodies so that at least the issue, we can make a honest recommendation to the rest of the legislature. This is our best guess based upon the information provided, that the direction. What I also anticipate is that we're looking at some evening meetings, because we all have, I've got finance and I've got five subcommittees I chair besides the others I sit on. So evenings are going to be best for me. Is that going to fit your schedule?
Yes,
I think,
sir.
Randy, and I'd just like to announce that Representative Jacko is now the rural representative. As Representative Cotton has appointed Representative Jacko. Richard Foster indicated that he was not going to be able to make the meeting. So
you asked Tom to give us a call on the bill if it's coming out.
Well, hopefully it'll be a task force bill, but I
okay. Well,
brought that forward.
Let us know.
Okay, yeah. Thanks, Ron.
Thanks.
Thank you, Mary.
You're welcome.
Okay, see you in a couple weeks.
You bet. Bye-bye.
Meeting's adjourned.
If someone's on legislative council, I wish they would bring...